ladies and gentlemen. The Conservative Daily Podcast is back. And now your host, Max McGuire.
Welcome back to the show, hour two of Open Line Friday, 888-441-1121. We do have some breaking news. I want to make sure that everyone knows this. Really, really good stuff. We're getting a glimpse of the new maid who's going to be working in the White House, starting with the Biden administration. Mr. Boozer, go ahead, put up my screen. This wonderful young woman is now going to be working in the White House. So say hello to Mrs. Trumpfire. And yes, this is a playful jab at Mrs. Doubtfire. I love this. I don't know who made this, whether it was in good fun or whether it was an attack on Trump, but I think it's hilarious, the idea of Trump dressing up as Mrs. Doubtfire to get back into the White House. Just want to share that with you. It made me laugh. Made me laugh last night when I saw it. Also, while we're getting back into things, Mr. Bruce, put up my screen. I want to put out a little question, everyone. Can you notice what's different about CNN's screen now that Joe Biden's in office? Can anyone see what is missing? So when Donald Trump was in office, they plastered the COVID death stats, the case stats, all over the screen. Joe Biden's in. Notice how those COVID stats are noticeably missing. Apparently, just like Barack Obama, just like Barack Hussein Obama, Joe Biden can part the seas and save the world because COVID-19 is no longer a fear-mongering tactic on CNN. Go ahead, take down my screen, Mr. Producer. And I'll let everyone know that yesterday, over 4,100 people passed away from COVID-19 as a result of Joe Biden's negligence. So again, I will call on everyone to let their elected officials know that Joe Biden needs to be impeached for his mishandling of the COVID-19 crisis. Give him the same treatment that Trump got. Real shame. Real, real shame. So we have some more cuts. We have people on the phones. I want to play a cut. This was a call that came in this week from a listener named Robert. Let's go ahead, Mr. Producer, and play call number three.
Hey, Josh. Robert Morris. Tried to call a couple times. Wanted to ask Max a question. What do you think about the 50,000 jobs that are going to be lost, especially with the Keystone Pipeline? I was curious if he thinks maybe Joe Biden maybe have consulted Hunter to see if we should shut those down.
Well, it's an interesting question. We talked about it. It's absolutely abysmal, the idea that during a economic downturn, during a pandemic economic lockdown, that Joe Biden's first executive orders would basically eliminate 52,000 jobs with two strokes of the pen. Disgusting. Whether or not Hunter Biden, the crackhead son, had any say in it, I doubt it, because if you read those executive orders, there was no language giving 10% to the big guy. So I'm right there. I'm going to assume that Hunter Biden didn't have any role in drafting it. Otherwise, the big guy would definitely get paid. So we have Cindy on the line. Cindy, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks so much for your show. I love listening to you.
Oh, thanks for calling in. What do you want to talk about?
I want to talk about his plans to reverse the ban on transgender people serving in the military.
Okay.
I was in the military myself. I served for 10 years, and my son, who is 20, tried joining when he was 18 and couldn't because it had not been 2 years since he had been off his ADHD medication. Mm-hmm. So my question to these people that are supporting this reversal of this ban is, why is it okay for somebody that is going to cost the government, you know, who knows how much money, and potentially have to be on medication for extended period of times and be deployed to go into the military, but not my son, who had been off his medication for a year and was doing fine, but because it was 2 years, he couldn't go in.
Yeah.
I just don't think it's right. I mean, there's so many reasons that you can't join the military, and they're focusing on this one thing because they think it's not fair.
Well, it's a great point, because we talked about this on the show earlier in the week. When you join the military, as your son learned, there is a whole list of things that you cannot have if you want to be in it. Like, you can't be a pilot if you have corrective lenses. You can't go in if you haven't been off ADD meds for 2 years, right? This idea that the military doesn't want soldiers either addicted to or reliant on controlled substances is very reasonable. I understand that a year off of it doesn't seem fair, but from the military's perspective, they don't want to have to add to their supply chain doses of certain medications to keep their soldiers alive. They want to be able to drop their soldiers behind enemy lines with cut off from all their supply chains and be able to survive. It's a very reasonable ask from the military. And when you are transgendered, when you are moving towards a transition, you require hormone supplements. You require hormone supplements.
Right.
So how could anyone possibly be a warfighter? I mean, we can talk about the issue of hormone supplements actually affecting people's mood, their ability to think straight. I've heard that argument. I don't know if I particularly buy it, because if that was the case, then you wouldn't allow female soldiers to be on birth control. So I don't know if I would buy that. But the idea of giving a woman testosterone, right, to change her gender, obviously that will have a negative effect, right? If you put all of your soldiers on testosterone or estrogen, that is going to have an effect in their ability to make war. But also just this idea that you're fighting in a combat zone, you're cut off. And instead of just trying to airdrop food and water, you're also going to start airdropping prescription medications. It's just insane.
I even had trouble when I first joined. My spine was a little curved, and they thought I had scoliosis. I had to jump through hurdles just to get approved to join because my spine was a little bit curved.
Things like that. That's insane. But like the big ones, like if you have a medical or mental illness as outlined in the DSM, right? If you are, if you have panic attacks and you are on anti-anxiety medication, you can't be in the military. It's not that they are being mean to people who suffer from anxiety. It's just that you can't be in a foxhole hearing voices or being concerned about what's going on around you, being overly nervous, right? You can't do it. You can't do it. There's going to be enough of that when people start coming under fire.
Yeah, I don't understand how the left doesn't understand that. Like they're just pushing for this and calling it, you know, discrimination or whether sexist, whatever they want to call it, but they're not seeing the logistics behind it.
Yeah. Richard in the comment section on YouTube says that it's also the additional expense, which is true. The idea when you become a soldier, you have VA benefits. The military has to take care of you. And this idea of you coming into the army or whatever branch you want to go into, and you're just telling them, oh, by the way, just mark it on your calendar. In 2 years, I'm going to go under and have gender reassignment surgery. I mean, no, the military does not have to take anyone on that knows in the middle of their deployment, in the middle of their contract, they will have to have surgery, whether it be elective or non-elective or voluntary. No, the military doesn't have to take you on. And yeah, there is an added expense to it, which is not fair for the military to have to bear that.
So do you think it will go through? Do you think he'll be able to reverse the ban?
I think he will. I think he'll be able to reverse it. So what the left did really, really well was that every time Trump did something, they gummed up the works and had it held up in court for years. If Donald Trump had been able to get this done day one and they fought in courts and it was went into effect permanently in 2018, that'd be one thing. But they gummed that up for a long time. So it's not that hard to just flip the switch again and go back to the old ways. And one thing, we talk about why the left would want to do this. Don't they understand these people are warfighters? I actually don't think that they do. I don't think that they want a hyper-masculine army. I don't think they want an army of warfighters. They don't want war, which will be interesting when Joe Biden sends troops back into Afghanistan and Iraq. But I digress. I think that they're more than happy to put pacifists in position of power. And the people I've talked to who are leaving the military have said that the officers, the people that they were reporting to, had already been, their words, infected with PC culture, with wokeism, dyeing their hair crazy colors. It's concerning. So
that's crazy.
I mean, we're in for a lot. This issue, I hope it doesn't go through. But if it does go through, it's going to be one of those head scratchers. But if this is what he did on his first day, I'm terrified for what's coming down the pike because.
Yeah, me too.
Well, thank you so much for the call, Cindy. Really do appreciate it. Again, our number 888-441-1121 if you want to call in. Let's play a couple more of these voicemails that we got. This is one from John. Let's go ahead, Mr. Producer, and go to call number four.
Max, it's John from the 213. Listen, I appreciate the fact that you're not playing Biden's speech because I've been reaching for my phone for the mute button every time the MF speaks a word. And I like what you call him, Pinon. Pinon. I like that little Spanish flair there. All right, brother, keep it up. Missing Joe today. Watching yesterday's show. Maybe he's joining us later. All right, God bless. You guys stay safe.
Well, thank you so much for the call. Really do appreciate it. I call him the Pino. The president in name only, but I like his take on it. Pino. Maybe that's president in name only. Maybe that's how we pronounce it. It's not like a long I. It's more of an E sound. Pino. Actually, he added the little enye over the end. Pino. Like almost like a pino colada. I like that. Joe Biden's the Pino. Well, thank you for the call. Really do appreciate it. We have another caller on the line, Paige. She wants to talk about whether it's worth impeaching Trump now. And can they try a private citizen? Paige, welcome to the call, the show.
Hi, Matt.
Hey, how's it going?
So they're going to deliver the articles of impeachment to the Senate on Monday. But can Monday. You even try a private Monday? Can you even try a private citizen?
Well, that's the question we've been talking about. It's happened three times in the past, never for a president. It's usually been for a cabinet official who saw that he was going to get impeached for something, resigned. They impeached him as a private citizen, and then they convicted him as a private citizen. So it's been done before, but it hasn't gotten the clear go-ahead from the Supreme Court whether or not they can do that. So ultimately, the question of whether or not they can do it will first be answered by the United States Senate. The Senate will decide whether or not they hear it. Now, if there were Republicans in charge who actually supported the Republican Party and conservatives, they would have been able to say no. But I have a hard time believing that Democrats are going to go out of their way and say unanimously, or even a couple of them say that we can't try a citizen. I don't think that they'll be willing to give up that power. But that doesn't make it right. It just means that they're not, I don't think they're going to police themselves.
It's disgusting that they're able to do all of this. Just everything is just wrong.
It's frustrating. I mean, it's the level of anti-Trumpism is deep. I mean, according to them, Orange Man is very bad. And even Orange Man as a private citizen is very bad. If you're Joe Biden, you should be wanting to stop this because this is going to take up a huge chunk of his first 100 days. So the fact that he's okay with this and Jen Psaki said that Biden believes the Senate can multitask, the Senate can't. Once they start an impeachment trial, they cannot take up any other business until it's done. They can take up no business. So that has gummed up the Senate once they do this. So she'll deliver it on Monday. We had originally heard she was going to do it today or tomorrow. I guess Monday is what she settled on. That requires that the Senate trial begin on Tuesday. And they cannot pass any bill until it's over. They cannot confirm any nominee to his cabinet until it is over. So I honestly don't know why they would want to do it. But again, I think we're underestimating just how bad Orange Man is in their eyes.
It's terrible. All because they don't want him to run. Against them again.
That's part of it. That's part of it. They don't want him to run against them, which if they truly did beat him with 81 million votes, they should be jubilant over the idea of Donald Trump running again. But they also don't want him to have a presidential library. They don't want him to have travel expenses, a pension, Secret Service protection, the staff that you get to manage your day-to-day affairs when you leave as president. They want to just make it like he never existed. So yeah, the never run again is part of what the Republicans want. Democrats are more likely to want to just punish him, make him hurt.
That's setting a very terrible precedent. I mean, like, we're just going to have this going on forever now. Now that they've gotten away, or they're going to get away, most likely, with doing this, that's just how they're going to conduct themselves moving further. It's just not a good thing.
Well, when Republicans controlled the House under Obama, we were very adamant that they should have impeached Koskinen, the head of the IRS, who presided over the Lois Lerner scandal, destroyed evidence in violation of a congressional preservation order. They should have impeached Eric Holder, when he refused to hand over certain documents, used presidential privilege to keep Fast and Furious documents away from Congress. They should have impeached Obama officials then. They didn't. Their GOP refused to. And what we saw from Democrats in the last 2 years of the Trump administration is that they're not that proud, right? They are more than happy to impeach someone who did nothing wrong. I hope that when Republicans take over the House again, which it appears like it's probably going to happen in 2 years, though don't count the chickens until they've hatched, I'm hopeful that we'll have leadership that will give the Democrats a bit of their own medicine, because they certainly deserve it. They absolutely do.
Oh, absolutely. I don't want them to think it's just, oh, we're being vindictive and we want to just impeach them because we're mad they were impeaching President Trump. But they really need something needs to be done. It's like the elite are just untouchable and they get away with so much. So they keep doing it.
Yeah, it really is true. It's I don't have any feel good answer for you. Only that we're not going to give up. We're going to keep fighting. And we're going to keep speaking truth to that power, both fighting against the Democrats and fighting against spineless Republicans as well. One final word before we let you go, Paige.
No, I just appreciate everything you guys are doing. I know sometimes it's not easy, and y'all having to jump through a lot of hoops to keep getting information out to everyone and giving us the place to talk. Y'all are doing a great job.
Well, I really do appreciate it. Thank you so much for the call, Paige. Have a great day. Again, our call number is 888-441-1121 if you want to join the show. Talk about anything on topic, off topic. It's Open Line Friday. Hit me with your best shot. If you have random questions about politics, political theory, constitutional law, any of that, feel free to hit me with your best shot, and maybe I can give you an answer. I want to play a clip of Nancy Pelosi declaring that apparently the evidence is out that Donald Trump never had a plan about distributing the vaccine. And immediately after that, she was refuted by Dr. Fauci. Let's go ahead and jump right now to cut number 8.
We learned this morning that the Trump administration had no real plan for the production and distribution of the vaccine.
We certainly are not starting from scratch, because there is activity going on in the distribution.
So what a lie. What a lie from Nancy Pelosi that the Trump administration had no plan for the production or distribution of the vaccine. That's just such a lie. Operation Warp Speed made these vaccines possible. Yes, even in the case of the Pfizer vaccine, Pfizer making a vaccine and knowing that they didn't have to worry about logistics, right? Knowing that the federal government would buy billions of dollars worth it, allowed them to do the research. Yeah, the federal government didn't directly fund the research into some of these vaccines, but the order, the pre-existing order that when you're done, whether it works or not, we're buying it from you, allowed this to happen. And the logistics of keeping these vaccines cold or super cold in some cases and getting them where they need to go. I mean, we're vaccinating just under 1 million people a day. So this idea that isn't true, it's just a complete lie. And the idea that the Biden administration has to start from scratch, if that's what they're doing, it's purely vindictive. That we don't want Trump to be able to claim victory in how the vaccine is distributed. If you take what they've inherited, which is a little under 1 million people a day getting vaccinated now, and they tear that down to build up a system that they like, would be the great disservice, in my opinion, for the American people. So on the phone lines, we have Zach. Okay, Zach wants to talk about something a little bit off the beaten track. Wants to talk about the Bolshevik revolution. All right, I'm going to play the role of the skeptic. I'm going to play the role of the skeptical judge, and I'll allow it. I just hope that we can tie it in. Go ahead, Zach.
I more than talk about it today, I was hoping that your History Day on Saturday, you would do it, because I started watching. I watched probably 3 hours of videos on YouTube last night, kind of talking about it and how everything unfolded. And I was like, holy cow, this is so similar to what's happening in the United States right now. I think it really could be a topic. When you look at Lenin and Stalin, and then you have the czars out there too, and that whole dynamic, and the people not trusting the capitalism model because they knew the game was rigged from the start, and how that creates a distrust automatically for government that people can start exploiting, and why people are gravitating towards big tech and government being like their religion. It's a huge, you're a theology guy as well, so you know about what's happening with the church too and how it's being outcast and people are replacing it with government. So it's like that kind of a topic, I think, is a very relevant issue right now. We don't have to talk about today, but that was what I wanted to say about that.
Probably won't be able to do it tomorrow because I don't know a ton about the Bolshevik Revolution. I know enough for conversation, but I need to do a little bit more research. But I like the advice, the topic idea. I mean, you mention it. It's pretty funny because I was just cleaning this. My real knowledge of that period in Russian history is kind of limited to this revolver that I just had sitting on my desk because I was cleaning it, a 1915 Russian Nagant revolver. So it was funny that you brought that up because I'm literally looking right over it on my desk like, oh, that's interesting. But yeah, I'll have to look into it more. I tend to try and make the Saturday shows about what I already have a pretty good knowledge base on, so I can just kind of speak stream of consciousness and get a show out. But yeah, I'll read into it, fill in the gaps in my history knowledge of
capitalism versus socialism is what it is.
Yeah.
Which is really, really interesting. I mean, you look at Lenin and Stalin and then the white party that was out there, which is like the, whatever you want to say, radical white supremacists, which the Republicans denounce. So that changes the scenario because that white party came out as opposition to the socialism party, but Republicans denounce supremacy. So it's like, that would be like if Lenin and Stalin, they could just run their propaganda, because that's big tech right now, just running their propaganda online and being the major story. So, yeah, if you can, that would be awesome on one of the future Saturdays. But the other thing that's more relevant today is kind of coming off your distribution, all these big global companies that didn't get involved. And they're all like, we need to save as many people as possible, wear masks, because anyone we can save is great. And they withhold their financial support until their candidate gets into office. And now you look at them all lining up like, let's help. We're going to totally help save people. Like, what?
The logistics, withholding the logistics, more importantly. I mean, Walmart has pharmacies nationwide, right? The fact that Walmart waited until after Trump left to join vaccine distribution is shameful. I mean, Amazon, you understand why Amazon would do it. Jeff Bezos and Trump had this little feud where they hated each other. So I can understand if there was like a personal element to it, but you can't, they're trying to pretend that it's just like, oh yeah, we're here. And it wasn't at all political. It's hard to believe that it wasn't political if they waited until day one, day two of the Biden administration to raise their hand and say, oh, we can help. And then Joe Biden signed yesterday his Defense Production Act. Yeah. Yeah. Joe Biden signed the Defense Production Act.
That's their model.
Yeah, they move product. I mean, with the vaccine, it's a little harder, especially, I forget which company it is, but the one that needs to be kept at super, super cold Antarctic almost kind of temperatures. That's a little bit beyond Walmart's distribution, but absolutely, they have refrigerated trucks where vaccines that don't need to be kept on ice could be transported. Yeah, they could have helped. They didn't.
And the government contracts always have a ton of money. So if they needed to build trucks that were special for transporting the vaccines, money was no object for COVID when we started. So the fact that no one went after that model and it was just forgot about when they're multi-billion-dollar companies, like, you don't become a multi-billion-dollar company by overlooking something like that. It was definitely intentional.
FedEx went after it. FedEx went after it, and I believe they gave it to FedEx to do the cold transport. But yeah, no, you would have thought they would be chomping at the bit, especially to try and make up for lost revenue. I mean, you think they would have. You think all different kinds of companies would be lining up and saying, hey, we've lost revenue here, but you can use our facilities for this. You think they would. And some of them did, and the ones that did should be applauded for it. But the idea that the Amazon and Walmart are going to come in and we're going to treat them as white knights riding to our rescue, it's pretty transparent why they did it.
Love the globalists. Comes back to 1917. They want to create that image because people know the game is rigged right now in capitalism. So they know people are unhappy and they're trying to make them think that they're this saving grace. The globalists are here for you guys. Isn't that great?
Yeah, it's fantastic, isn't it? One last word before we let you go, Zach.
I think that covered pretty much everything. I hope you can do one on the Bolshevik Revolution era. There was propaganda. I guess here's the final thing. I watch Anomaly, who's like another newscaster, And he was talking about the PSYOP propaganda that led up to the Bolshevik Revolution, mm-hmm. because it was kind of like the Q conspiracy, where it's like, if you see soldiers in the streets, it's no big deal. And they actually downplayed it for people. And that's what allowed them to do what they did back in the day.
I'll look into it. In high school, I had the option to take AP European history. And instead, I took AP art history. So I never really studied Euro history in that regard. Everything I learned about it was just other history classes in passing. So I'll look into it. It probably won't be tomorrow. It'll probably be a couple weeks at least.
Awesome. Keep doing what you're doing. I'll talk to you guys later.
All right. Thanks, Zach. Thank you for the call. Our number 888-441-1121 if you want to call in. Open line Friday. I think we have one more call that we haven't played yet, Mr. Producer. This is a call that we got this week from Barbara. Let's go to call number 5.
Hi, my name is Barbara. I'm calling from Colorado. And I'm watching a rerun of your program. Oh, yeah, a rerun. Anyway, I'm just wondering why something can't be done about the fact that this is elder abuse, what Jill Biden and the rest of them are doing to Joe Biden. Not my president, but still, he's a human being. And I think what they're doing is absolute abuse, and somebody needs to be held accountable for that.
Yeah, I mean, we've been saying this on the show. We've had whole podcast episodes about doing a deep dive into Joe Biden's mental decline, probably at this point 100 episodes ago. I'll see if I can dig them up later and repost them on Facebook and YouTube. We've done a deep dive into this, and it is shameful what they've been putting Joe Biden through, but he is the true puppet. I mean, we played that clip yesterday of Joe Biden walking past the Marines, someone seemingly whispering in his ear, telling him to salute the Marines. And instead of doing it, he just says, "Salute the Marines," and walks right past him. I mean, this is not normal. It's not normal at all. We played the clip of Joe Biden in his speech saying it's important to remember. And then he kind of gets sidetracked and says to himself, "Well, sometimes it's hard to remember." I mean, we've gone into this. It's absolutely elder abuse. And whether or not anyone can be held accountable for it, I don't think so. It's going to be hard. It's going to be hard to prove that. But history should, I hope, the history will remember that the people around Joe Biden, not only his family, but his advisors, cared more about getting Donald Trump out of office than they did doing for Joe what was in his best interest. Like, if he continues down this trajectory, he's not going to last for 4 years. Or maybe it's a situation where he's just the Pino, president in name only, and he just signs things and other people do stuff. I don't know. But from where I've stood and watched this, him forgetting where he is, forgetting when he is, I mean, that's always been the big one for me. When he forgets when he is, when he thinks he's in another time and talks about himself as if he's running for Senate or as if he's still in the Senate, that's always been really concerning to me. And we've heard reports that he's on these medications to try and slow down the cognitive decline. And anyone who's ever had a loved one who's been on those types of pills knows that they don't last forever. They wear out and your body builds up an immunity to it. And when that happens, you have to start jumping to different brands to try and mask the effects of your cognitive decline. He has to be running low on the number of options to try. And we've heard reports that they've gone through a couple different potential drugs to help him. It's really scary that we might have a president who is basically kept up by pharmaceuticals, which might explain him repealing Trump's executive order to decrease the cost of pharmaceuticals. I say that in jest, but who knows? It's possible. Considering that the left made so many things up about Trump without any evidence at all, I'm more than comfortable making that claim. So we have this from the Texas Attorney General. Let me put it up on my screen. Just breaking now, so I'm seeing this just as you're seeing it. Mr. Minister, put up my screen if you can. From Ken Paxton, Attorney General Ken Paxton today filed a complaint and motion for a temporary restraining order in the United States District Court for the Southern District of Texas, asking the court to immediately halt the Department of Homeland Security's DHS freeze on deportations of illegal aliens. On its first day in office, the Biden administration cast aside congressionally enacted immigration laws and suspended the removal of illegal aliens whose removal is compelled by those very laws. This move violates the United States Constitution, federal immigration and administrative law, and a contractual agreement between Texas and DHS. That part's important to prove that they have standing. Last night, Attorney General Paxton issued a letter warning that the administration's actions resulted in abdication of DHS's obligation to enforce federal immigration law, which would seriously and irreparably harm Texas and its citizens. Quote, in one of its first dozens of steps that harm Texas and the nation as a whole, the Biden administration directed DHS to violate federal immigration law and breach an agreement to consult and cooperate with Texas on that law. Our state defends the largest section of the southern border in the nation. Failure to properly enforce the law will directly and immediately endanger our citizens and law enforcement personnel, said Attorney General Paxton. DHS itself has previously acknowledged that such a freeze on deportations will cause concrete injuries to Texas. I am confident that these unlawful and perilous actions cannot stand. The rule of law and security of our citizens must prevail. So, Texas doing what we hope Texas would do. Now, I just hope that they draw a judge who will issue the temporary restraining order. Because during the Trump years, it always kind of went back to that one judge in Hawaii ruling for the entire nation. Hopefully, they can draw a sympathetic Trump appointee in district court. So we'll follow that as it develops, but I just want to share it with you because that's just out today. Go ahead and take that down, Mr. Producer. Interesting stuff. Again, our call-in line, 888-441-1121 if you want to call in. I want to play this. This was a pretty shameful display on CNN with Cuomo. Talking, basically trying to shame Ted Cruz for wearing a come and take it face mask. Now, as we've covered on the show, especially as we sold those t-shirts, which sold like hotcakes, we're gonna have to make more of them for different holidays. The come and take it battle flag comes from the Texas Revolution, when the Mexican army told Texas revolutionaries to lay down their arms and surrender their cannons, and the Texas revolutionaries modeled off of the Spartans at Thermopylae. Yelled, come and take it. And they put it on a flag and they flew the flag, come and take it, with a cannon underneath it. It's Texas history. It's how Texas was formed. Not giving it up and continuing to fight. CNN is trying to make that about extremism and that anyone who likes the come and take it battle flag is some kind of white supremacist terrorist. I don't know. Let's go ahead and play cut number 9.
And those people also said they weren't just acting on Trump. They were acting on Senator Cruz's urging as well. Not hearing anything from the Republican caucus in the Senate about him, right? Imagine if he were a Democrat. And then Cruz comes to the inauguration yesterday, a day that was supposed to be about unity, in this stupid mask. He wore the same one on Insurrection Day when he voted to overturn the election on the basis of no proof but polls. Come and take it is sewn on it, a revolution symbol. They carry the Trump virus, these guys. And it's just as sickening to us as COVID in terms of our democracy. This symbol that was waved around by domestic terrorists who came to the Capitol on the 6th, that's what we want in our leaders? Come and get it? To keep showing solidarity with the worst of us who tried to violently take down our democracy? Don't allow it. Demand it be called out and watch the places that do the job for you.
All right, let's cut it. So apparently, if you like the come and take it battle flag, if you like that, then you are now a white supremacist, you're a domestic terrorist. One good note, I guess, if you are a domestic terrorist, maybe the CNN will give us some money. I'm sorry, the CIA will give us some money, right? Historically, the CIA has funded terrorists. So maybe that's a silver lining in this. We'll all be getting a check from the CIA since we're now apparently the biggest terrorist threat to the United States ever. Interesting. So remember earlier this year, there was a big hubbub over the Betsy Ross flag. Do you remember? Big hubbub, complaint, Betsy Ross flag. It was Nike. Nike didn't want the Betsy Ross flag. Go ahead, Mr. Producer, and put up my screen. This is from Wall Street Journal at the time. Nike nixes Betsy Ross flag sneaker after Colin Kaepernick intervenes. The Betsy Ross flag was shameful, they said. It was a sign of our dangerous racist past. And anyone who flew the Betsy Ross flag was a white supremacist. Remember all these things? We had a show about it. We talked about it. Well, Would you be surprised? Here's a shot of Joe Biden's inauguration. What's that there? Kind of hard to see. Let me zoom in for everyone who can't see. You see that? What's that? What's that little guy right there? Oh, it's the Betsy Ross flag. Joe Biden had a symbol of white supremacy at his inauguration, according to Colin Kaepernick. Now, I don't hear anyone saying that the Betsy Ross flag is racist now. Amazing. I mean, I truly believe that they just make it up as they go along. They're literally making it up as they go along. And when they can't be outraged over something legitimate, they just make it up. But now the come and take it battle flag is also apparently white supremacist, just like the don't tread on me is white supremacist. Just like the blue lives matter, blue line, thin red line flags are white supremacist. Notice what they're doing. They're going after conservatives in every single angle, right? If you fly a come and take it flag, doesn't just mean that you oppose gun control. It means you want to destroy democracy. Interesting stuff. So we have Charlene on the line. She wants to talk about the future legislatively. Charlene, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. Been listening to you for a while. Appreciate what you and Joe have been doing. And been also looking for more information for perhaps you and others. But I'm becoming more interested, obviously, with everything that has transpired over the year 2020. And now I'm at least focusing on one area. But also I'm looking just for what better way can I focus my time and energy, and perhaps what time I have left, I should say. I mean, I might have a few good years in me still, but, you know, it's just looking for more information as to how we can best serve and to be able to hopefully turn the tide back around. I am totally surprised at what I'm seeing now. You're reading about all the different steps that it takes to reach the totalitarianism. Yeah. And I think we're in like step 8 or something right now out of 10. And it is really surprising. But I wanted to bring to the forefront, I saw a House representative bill, judiciary bill, I think, go up. And it actually talks about, let me see if I can bring up the image. It was HRJ. But first of all, let me say that you can go to congress.gov on the internet and look at the most viewed bills. And right now I could say that the top one is H.R. 127 to provide for the licensing of firearm and ammunition possession and the registration of firearms and to prohibit the possession of certain ammunition. And I'm reading directly, word for word, from the website as to what that bill entails. And then they've got a couple more. But the one, let me see, I think it's in my photos here that I could bring this up. It was H.J. Res. 14, proposing an amendment to the Constitution of the United States to abolish the Electoral College.
Yeah.
And to provide for the direct election, of the president and vice president of the United States. And that's quote-unquote from that website as well. But that was just introduced January 11th. So I think they do. They introduce these bills in amongst when our attention is elsewhere, and then they try to work on them and get them passed without any kind of...
Here's the good news. It is not easy to amend the Constitution. The founders made sure of that. It is a difficult process. Not only does it have to involve Congress, with supermajorities in Congress, it also requires a supermajority of state legislatures, of which there are almost half where Republicans control both chambers in states. So the odds of Republican legislatures going along with this in a sufficient number to amend the Constitution, very, very low.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the good news. But you're absolutely correct in that they push these bills through and they expect you not to care, not to pay attention to them. And then they either pass them in the dead of night or they attach them as an amendment to a must-pass spending bill and to try and force Republicans to go along with it. Absolutely right.
Right.
So we're going to be focusing heavily on these bills. Probably the first one we're going to focus on is H.R. 1, which is, I believe it's called For the People Act, which is basically trying to take all of the COVID-19 election regulations, the vote by mail, the extended registration, all the things that Democrats took advantage of to mm-hmm. win, right? They're going to try and make that permanent, try and make that nationwide. So bills like that, very terrifying, because it doesn't take a whole lot of Republicans to go along with it to pass. So we're going to be focusing on those. I haven't read H.R. 127 yet. I assume it's probably similar to the other ones that that have been put forward, trying to basically treat AR-15s as if they're machine guns, ban hollow point ammunition, things like that. But we will definitely do an episode on the gun control bills in the near future, because the left has been wanting this. They've been asking for it. They've been pushing for it. And now they're a couple votes away from getting it.
Right. Well, one other point about the I was about to say this one about the, as far as the Electoral College, I believe it was on one. It was either the Hoover Institution or the there's another one. Conservative group, and I'm sorry I couldn't remember the name, but they had a professor on, and they talked about this. And what stuck with me, and it was a woman professor that actually is constantly looking at this. They being, I don't know, it's some group that has gotten support for this proposal of states coming together and creating an agreement among the states. And they've gotten, she says, they need to have the 270 votes, I guess, like similar to what we have in the election, from these states, these certain states, to be able to have this pass. And she said it won't get rid of the Electoral College, but it will make it a moot. And I don't know how. I haven't been able, but I just wanted to...
I forget the name of it, but that's something that's been they've been passed around, and they're basically trying to make it so that when states, they're not there yet, they need more states to sign on to it. But if they hit the magic number, they could theoretically get rid of the Electoral College in their states, which is really, really sad, really, really scary. I don't understand why they would do that. I mean, Democrats are in one breath. Democrats are saying that we now have sufficient numbers in these states. Republicans will never win again in the Electoral College. In the very next breath, they want to abolish the Electoral College. So something is rotten here. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. It's almost like we just defeated Donald Trump with more votes than ever cast in American history. We also are terrified and don't ever want to let him run again. Doesn't really mesh.
Yeah.
So this is one of those issues that doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yes. And that's where I'm glad that you're on, and we can also come together in an understanding of what we can do collectively to understand actually what's happening in our political arenas and correct the course.
Well, I do appreciate the call. We're going to have to stay on this. We're going to have to keep fighting. They're going to try and slip stuff through. And just know that we're going to be watching. I watch the Federal Register more than probably anyone else. I mean, that site, congress.gov, I'm on that daily trying to see what new bills have been filed. One thing that we're probably going to hear about is the Article 5 Convention of the States, which is another way to amend the Constitution by having, you need 34 states to call a convention, and then you need 38 states to ratify the change to the Constitution. That's one way to change the Constitution. So going forward, we don't have complete control of enough state legislatures to do it, but I'm hopeful that we're going to hear state legislatures start to push back against some of these things and try to amend the Constitution without Congress using Article 5. So thank you for the call. Really do appreciate it. There's so much, but I want to leave a little bit of good news, because we've talked about this. We've talked about this on the show today. Ms. Brewster, go ahead and put up my screen. This is a ruling that just came down in the last day or two from a federal judge in North Dakota. He strikes down the mandate that Catholic doctors, Catholic hospitals must perform transgender, gender-changing surgeries, gender transition surgeries. So we had a federal judge strike it down as violative of not only the doctors, but also the organization's deeply held religious belief to force them through HHS to basically conduct these gender transition surgeries. So a little bit of good news. I mean, right now that's in North Dakota, so we'll see if it ends up becoming a nationwide thing. But it is at least a little bit of good news there. I didn't want to end the show without at least sharing that. And I want to also bring this up, Mr. Bruce, put it on my screen. This was a shocking news story. A Florida bank has cut ties with Donald Trump. Banks United has basically just cut ties with Donald Trump. Interestingly enough, right before Trump left office, the administration finalized a rule that said banks cannot cancel accounts for political reasons. They have to provide better reasoning than just political reasons. So I'm not sure if this bank qualifies in terms of size, but pretty shameful that Donald Trump left office and now they're trying to stop his ability to bank. I mean, this is where we talked about the old libertarian thing. Well, if you don't like it, build your own social network. Well, if you don't like being banned by the banks, build your own international financial institution. It doesn't really work that way, right? We're seeing just how far they're willing to go with this cancel culture. And they're literally trying to cancel Donald Trump's ability to even pay his bills, to even engage in commerce. I mean, what's Donald Trump going to do? Just like be a cash guy, all cash? That'd be insane. But, I mean, that's the left's argument. You have no right to... You have no right to the banking institutions. One more call before we end the show today. We have Suzanne, who wants to talk about executive orders. Suzanne, welcome to the show. Oh, did she drop off? Oh, she might have dropped off. Ms. Producer, send me a message if she's back on. If she gets on. Oh, is she on? All right, Suzanne, welcome to the show.
Hi, Max. Quick question for you. Hoping you sure. can explain the difference to me between an executive action and an executive order, because I understand that's what Biden has been signing, and I went to the Federal Register yesterday to look to see what executive orders, and there weren't any.
So
I'm hoping you can explain the difference.
So that doesn't necessarily mean that they weren't signed. The Federal Register, it can take time, especially when it's an order like stop everything you're doing, change everything. So it can take time to get added into the Federal Register. And some of them, I know at least some of them are definitely going to go into the Federal Register. Executive actions typically don't go into the Federal Register. And that tends to be more, less stringent things. So an executive order is the policy, go do it. An executive action would be something like, is my opinion that we shouldn't prosecute illegal aliens convicted of drunk driving, that we should no longer deport any illegal alien who has a drunk driving conviction. That isn't necessarily an executive order. It is an executive action, and it's using the president's authority to basically to set enforcement priorities. So it's a more technical difference. I mean, we can get into it. Executive orders are more powerful. They, as you say, tend to be codified within the Federal Register. Executive actions are also legal executive actions, but they are more interpretive, and they aren't as it isn't as necessary to put them in the Federal Register. Does that make sense?
So one requires legislation, the other is basically no better than a memorandum.
Well, not necessarily requires legislation. I mean, typically an executive order is how they want to interpret or enforce a piece of legislation. An executive action is as you mentioned, a memorandum saying, this is what I expect you to do. This is how I expect the government to run. Now, sometimes executive actions more line up with executive orders and have to get added, but typically it's, as you said, more of a memorandum that isn't necessarily pointless. It has real effects, right? But executive orders are more codified within regulatory structures, and they change regulatory structures. So the Federal Register is where all regulations and regulatory changes are published. You don't necessarily need to change regulation through an executive action, which is why not all the time that they're added. If that makes sense, I probably missed a few steps in explaining it, but that seems, at least from my understanding, to be the key difference.
Okay, well, that makes a little bit more sense, because I was just curious as why there weren't unlisted in the register yet. But yeah, I do understand it takes time.
It takes some time. Okay. And there are going to be some that get added, some that don't get added, like Joe Biden's executive proclamation telling everyone in HR positions within the federal government to make sure that they hire people with race as a contributing factor, right? That's not going to be codified in the regulatory scheme. It might be, maybe they do, but it's basically him saying, hey, I want you to make sure that you pay attention to an applicant's race and make sure that you're equitable. That's not, that wouldn't really go into the regulatory changes. Now, if he wanted to proclaim my power of my presidency, I forbid you from hiring any white person, and that actually has to go into the Federal Register, then that would be a little bit more significant. But he's not doing that. He's more saying that I want you to make sure that you live the spirit of racial equity and remember the pain that's been felt over American history. That's not really something you add to the registry, but it doesn't mean it isn't important or isn't powerful.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's a good thing I don't work in HR anymore.
Yeah, it would it'd be a nightmare. It's a good thing I'm working from home too. I like that. less HR write-ups, less HR violations. Well, thank you so much for the call, Suzanne. Really do appreciate it. Running up against a hard break, the end of our 2 hours. That went by pretty fast. Let me know in the comment section if you liked Open Line Friday. I thought it went well. We're definitely going to keep going with playing the recordings that come in. We listen to them, and during the week, if it's salient to the conversation, we'll play a recording. If not, we'll leave it for the end of the week and play more recordings. Again, just reminding everyone, if you're going to call in, a couple of things to remember. It's not Joe's personal line, so he won't necessarily call you back. He gets forwarded to them, he listens to them, but it's not his personal line, so if you call, you're not going to get him to pick up. Also, be careful with how much personally identifiable information you leave. If you leave your phone number, we're going to have to edit it out. If you say it repeatedly and it makes it hard to edit it out, it makes it less likely that your question or comment will make it on the air. Just because we have so many comments to get through, we can't be spending time editing. And obviously also keep it short and sweet. We had a couple of people leave us very long messages, which I listened to them very, very good. We just can't give 10, 15 minutes of airtime. So short and sweet questions and comments are more likely to get on the air as well. And again, our call number 888-441-1121 if you want to call after the fact and leave a message. Well, that's going to be it for this edition of the Conservative Daily Podcast. I'll be live tomorrow for a history podcast. Let me know in the comment section, other than the Bolshevik Revolution, which I don't know like the back of my hand, let me know in the comment section what you think would be a good idea for a history story time hour. And I'll read them. Still haven't figured out what tomorrow's going to be, but we go live Saturday, 2 p.m. Eastern. Typically, they've been a little shorter than an hour. I try and keep them short and sweet. I don't try and just fill up the time. I spend as much time as we need to make the points and let everyone get back to their weekend. But let me know in the comment section what you want to hear, what you think would be a good idea to cover from a historical perspective or even a political science perspective. If you have questions about political theory, let me know there as well. Well, that's going to be it for this edition of the Conservative Daily Podcast. Joe is hopefully back on Monday. He is on a trip today, meeting with people about the IPO. So hopefully he'll have an update for us on Monday. If you like the show, again, make sure you subscribe to the audio versions of the podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Podbean, all links in the description. We go live Monday through Saturday, 2 p.m. Eastern. So make sure you like and follow our Facebook page, subscribe, hit that bell for notifications on YouTube, very important, and then also follow us on DLive as well. There's a link in the description to sign up for our email newsletter, very important. Also, if you haven't already, text the word freedom, F-R-E-E-D-O-M, to 89517. You'll get a text alert when we go live. We might try also sending out a second alert for the second hour. We've started to see that viewership is dropping a little bit in the second hour. People aren't staying on as much. So we'll try next week, 1 or 2 days, sending out a second text, letting people know the second hour is on, just to see if maybe we can keep more people watching longer into the show. Also, there's a link if you want to donate, bit.ly/CD-donate. Make sure you check that out. We are on Parler. Once they go up, follow us at Conservative Daily. And we're also on Rumble, rumble.com/user/Conservative Daily. This will be going up on Rumble shortly after we're ending the podcast. So again, that's going to be it for this edition of the podcast. My name is Max McGuire. Remember, everyone, the fight to take back our country clearly isn't over yet, but the only way we win is if we all stand up and fight together.